Taped from New Jersey, it's the SNL Nerds, the show where two comics from New Jersey nerd out about Saturday Night Live. I'm your co-host, John Trumbull.
And I'm your co-host, Darren Patterson.
Hey, Darren, how you doing?
I'm good, John, I'm good. How was your earthquake? How did that go?
It was all right, pretty uneventful. Yeah, I guess it's a minor earthquake. It was like a 4.8, they were saying, and the epicenter was somewhere here in New Jersey.
Yeah, is that minor? I don't know.
Well, I know it's a scale of 1 to 10. I mean, and it didn't feel that bad, honestly. And,
yeah,
you know, everyone from California is like, pussies.
yeah.
So, I don't know. I mean, it really just shook for a few seconds. This was only my second earthquake ever, so I don't have a huge point of reference. So.
Really? Oh, you've been through... I've never been through an earthquake until now.
There was one that was... I guess it was about 10 years back or something here in Jersey. Yeah. And it was another thing like that. It was just like real fast. And it was... And that was like my first ever earthquake. So I was like... By the time I realized it was an earthquake, it was like half over. So...
Wait, it was here in Jersey? I don't even remember that.
Yeah.
Huh. I don't recall that. All right. Yeah, I thought that, I don't remember that. But yeah, like, I mean, when it happened on Friday, that was the first time I've ever been mm-hmm. through an earthquake. Because, like, I mean, I was working from home, and then the whole, you know, my whole apartment shook, and then I thought for a minute, like, oh, somebody must be moving something upstairs. Then it shook a little harder.
Right.
And then I was like, oh, maybe there's a truck going by. And then it shook even harder, and I was like, all right, that's an earthquake.
yeah. That was kind of my experience too. It was like, oh yeah, is there something, you know, what's happening? Why are the windows rattling? And, you know, but nothing like fell off tables or shelves or anything like that. So all things considered, pretty minor. And we had like a little aftershock later in that day, I think around 5 o'clock or something like that.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. But yeah, nothing too bad out here. You know, just people were, of course, because I follow a lot of comedians, people are making a lot of earthquake jokes almost immediately on social media.
I mean, inside a half hour. Yeah.
Yes, very much. We comedians, we get them out quick.
And I'm proud of mine still. I don't think I saw it duplicated by anybody else. I joked that the earthquake was a 5 on the Richter scale, and I had a photo of Andy Richter as the quintuplet Richter brothers from Arrested Development. And I didn't see anybody else doing that. So
you are unique in that respect, good sir. That was a thinker. That was a quality one right there.
Thank you.
Okay.
I'm very proud.
Yeah. But we're not here to talk about earthquakes, ladies and gentlemen. We're here to talk about the latest episode of Saturday Night Live.
Yes, we are. And the latest episode at our time of recording is season 49, episode 16 from April 6th, 2024, with Kristen Wiig as the host, her fifth time hosting, and Ray as the musical guest.
Kristen Wiig coming back five times. And, you know, thanks to our good friend at the SNN Network, I found out that she is the fifth former cast member to be inducted into the Five Timers Club.
Oh, okay. Let me see if I can name the others. We got our Tina Fey.
Bam.
We got our Bill Murray.
Bam.
Chevy Chase.
Medium talent.
Okay, that's three.
One more.
Oh yeah, there's only one more. No, geez, who else? Who else? Who else does Lauren have a big crush on? I
10 seconds.
Yeah, I don't know. Pass.
Ah, so close. Will Ferrell.
We were looking for Will Ferrell.
Johnny, tell him what he could have won.
What am I supposed to tell myself?
Yeah. yes. Tell yourself what you could have won.
The peace of mind that comes with knowing that inconsequential bit of trivia.
Bam! There it is.
Yeah.
But Kristen Wiig came back fifth time hosting. Expectations were pretty high, I'd say. She's a beloved cast member. People really love looking forward to her. Of course, her time on the show, she was like a big deal, America's sweetheart, some would say. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I, for the most part, I think I think she kind of lived up to the hype on this episode. Like, I'll give you a little peek at my sheet. I enjoyed this episode quite a bit, I'll say.
She did a nice job. I think it was a generally pretty solid episode of SNL. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But
so that's our episode this week, folks.
We're done. Follow me.
We enjoyed it. Yeah.
Yes. So, yeah, follow us, SNL Nerds Show. Oh, that's a quick one.
Yeah.
Wow.
Sometimes you just cut to the chase, right?
Yeah. No, we gotta talk about each episode. Come on, we gotta show our work.
Okay, fine.
Gotta show our work.
All right. Yeah. Otherwise, how are people supposed to know what their opinions are supposed to be?
Exactly. How will people know what to think if we don't tell them?
Yeah, we're doing the Lord's work here.
Yes, you're welcome, America. Amen.
All right, so let's dive in. Well, starting out, we got the TBS March Madness Cold Open.
March Madness is upon us, NCAA, mm-hmm. basketballs, sports, mm-hmm. and the like. And we go into JAJ as Ernie Johnson, Devin Walker as Kenny the Jet Smith, and of course Keenan as Charles Barkley, all talking about March Madness, but they're having a hard time doing that because even though they got to talk about the men's college basketball, what they really want to talk about is the women's tournament right now, because that seems to be the big news that's out there. Like, the women's right. tournament is getting like record numbers in viewers, and a lot of people are invested in it right now.
Yeah, yeah. There's a breakout player, Caitlin Clark, who's been making some very impressive moves and plays. I don't know. I don't watch March Madness, but I've seen Caitlin Clark pop up on my socials. So
I love trying to hear you do like sports talk. Like,
like, plays? That's not the right word.
Touchdowns? Is that it? Tackles?
I don't know. Yeah, she made like some long passes and I guess scored a bunch or something. I don't know. She did something impressive.
She got the golden snitch. I don't know.
She got the golden ticket, so she's getting to tour the Wonka Chocolate Factory.
Yes.
And Willy Wonka is going to leave the whole shebang to her.
If you want to be paradise.
Yeah, because all the other players turned into blueberries and stuff.
Yes, of course. Oompa Loompa Doompity Doo.
Yes. That's my understanding of it. We also had Heidi as Coach Kim Mulkey, who I assume is a real person.
I've seen her, again, social media, but she's the women's coach at LSU, and she's known for being very, like, kind of hard and tough on her players, but she also is known for dressing very, like, flashy and kind of flamboyantly and loud colors on the sidelines.
Yeah, okay, she said this thing, she said, she had this line, she said, you know, that, like, she went into a store and said, make me look like the Riddler went to Talbot's, and I just thought, that's a really weird thing to say when you're all in pink, because the Riddler doesn't wear pink, but...
Yeah, that's true. But if you Google her name and look at the outfit she wears very kind of... Like, she has all these kind of lady suits, but they're all, like, different crazy colors, like, almost like mm-hmm. Harlequin-like. Like, she stands out.
She's okay, like, all right. So, yeah, I figured it was something like that. I was just like, but the Riddler, his predominant color is green. This premise is based on a lie.
Yeah, that I'll admit that joke is not.
It's, as a comic geek, it bugged me.
I get that joke isn't the strongest. I mean, if we're being totally honest, a lot of the jokes in this cold open aren't the strongest.
I didn't care for it. And, you know, part of that, of course, is that if you're doing a sketch about March Madness, it's not really going to speak to me. But I also just didn't think it was especially funny.
Yeah, I don't know why. But, like, I mean, the same way. On last week's episode where I talked about how, as soon as I see a PDD sketch or a Weekend Update, I know 9 times out of 10 it's going to be strong. I had that exact opposite reaction with the cold open. Whenever I see the cold open, I know it's like, all right, this is going to be probably the weakest sketch of the night. And sure enough, it is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, hey, at least it wasn't another political cold open. That's something, right?
Yeah. I mean, at least this cold open is short. It's like it's not even 5 minutes, like 4 minutes, 50 seconds. I don't know. I thought it was kind of funny when Charles Barkley was Googling Vegas women spread to see, like, if
the he was like, spread. Oh, that was not what I was expecting. Yeah, that was all right.
Yeah, but I don't know. Yeah, if this sketch kind of felt like it was written by somebody who doesn't know much about sports, you know, like so maybe one of us. But
sure, yeah. But, seems yeah. likely.
But yeah, like it just the jokes just really, it just didn't feel strong enough. I mean, I get the basic premise is, oh, women's basketball is cool now, and men's college basketball is kind of passe. But that seemed to be the only thing they had to say in this sketch, and they really didn't.
Yeah, yeah.
Like the joke, I really didn't write much about this because the jokes really were kind
of me neither. Yeah,
flat for me, and not the strongest cold open. So already I'm like, oh dear. All right, well, but like, I am.
You're
happy
like, oh, we bet. Oh, if we have some celebrity cameos, I bet that'll elevate this episode. Well, but what are the chances of that happening?
Yeah, well, your prayers have been answered because here we go, monologue.
Okay. Kristen Wiig coming out. She acknowledges that it's her fifth time hosting right off the rip. I like that she said, you know, that she checked in with the band. She had like piano player and then the drummer, and then she was like, and Lenny, how are you doing? He's like, I'm all right.
That was a nice little gag, too.
It's a dumb joke, but damned if it didn't get me. I liked it.
I laughed, too. There's no shame in that, John.
No, I mean, I was just like, hey, Lenny, get some dialogue. Nice.
Yeah, I just like the fact that she acknowledged the band, because I think, because, like, the band is there in the background night after night, but, like,
people yeah.
kind of, they're just kind of, people know they're there, but they just kind of, people just don't really acknowledge them or kind of see them. They're just kind of like
yeah, that's true. They are, you know, some of the unsung heroes of SNL. And, you know, they're not just playing the music going in and out of the commercial breaks. They're also covering the music in sketches. So it's got to be a demanding job.
Yeah, so it's nice that she gave a shout out to Sean Pelton on drums. I'm looking this all up right now. And Toughest Zimbabwe on keyboards.
Oh, that's a great name. That's a great name right there.
Toughest Zimbabwe. That's
don't
that's,
you wish you were named Toughest Zimbabwe?
Every day of my life.
I mean, he sounds like he should be like a soccer player or something.
He really that does name, but play like Manchester United or something.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yes, and of course the great Lenny Pickett. We.
Yeah.
He got a line in, so that was fantastic.
Yeah, he's been with the show forever. He seems like a cool dude.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So we have Kristen Wiig talking about, you know, it's her fifth time hosting, and then, you know, of course, popping up in the audience, we got Paul Rudd, we got a bearded Paul Rudd. He's wearing his Five Timers Club jacket.
Bam! Like,
hey, are you doing one of those sketches with all sorts of celebrity cameos? You know, because I haven't gotten a script or anything.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh no, I don't think we're doing that. And he's like, oh okay.
Sad Rudd.
Yeah, sad Rudd. Then we got Paula Pell.
Bam!
Ex-SNL writer Paula Pell, now beloved actress Paula Pell. Paula Pell, she should host the show, right?
Dude, you took the words right out of my mouth. I think it's time we get Paula Pell to host this thing. If she wants to do it, I'd say it. Like, again, like I know it's a thing where people who have written on SNL, they rarely get to host. But, I mean, we've already had, like, Conan has hosted, of course, Mulaney.
Yeah.
Let's get it. It's time for, and of course, Tina Fey, but she was on it. But, yeah, let's get Paula Pell in there. Paula Pell, all the way.
Yeah, I think she would be a smashing host. And, you know, she could come out, do a monologue, and do like, a montage of all her asking questions from the audience.
Yes.
And I like how she played that. She was like, yeah, well, you know, I'm actually a writer on the show, but I'm going to pretend to be an audience member, so Kristen's going to pretend that she doesn't know me. And she says that after she's been introduced as Paula Pell, which was cute. I also liked her line about how they basically hand out the five-timers jackets to everybody like free maxi pads.
Right, exactly. So that's the premise of the cold open, as we learned that, like, now the five-timers jacket doesn't really mean as much as it used to because Lauren just kind of gives them out to anybody.
I liked that because I was kind of thinking going into this, I was like, oh, you know, what else can they do with the Five Timers Club at this point? Because they've done so many variations on it for, like, geez, over 30 years at this point, because they introduced it, I think, sometime around the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah. Like, I think, like, Tom Hanks was the first one to do that, right? Like,
the club. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Robert Smigel was actually posting on Twitter that, you know, he and Conan O'Brien co-wrote the first Five Timers Club sketch.
Wow. Fantastic.
And, you know, and it was just a bit where, you know, it was Tom Hanks talking about how hosting for the fifth time is significant. And it just somehow caught people's fancy and it became a thing, and now it's become an expected thing. But
yeah.
I don't know. I mean, how much more life does the Five Timers Club have in it?
I don't know, man.
I wonder.
We'll explore. We'll explore and learn together.
Yeah, but we have Matt Damon popping up.
He has a jacket, even though he's only hosted twice.
Yeah, but Lauren said his first time counted for three, and his second time counted for two. That's what a good host he is.
That's right. The math adds up. Math is mathing. Yep.
It all works out, and then like we have a cutaway, and she's like, "Oh wow, it seems like everybody's getting a Five Timers Club jacket." And then we have a cutaway to Fred Armisen, John Hamm, Will Forte, Martin Short, all standing with Lorne, and they're all wearing Five Timers Club jackets.
Yeah, that blew my. I was like, "Whoa, we're getting all the cameos here tonight."
Yeah, even though none of them have hosted the show five times.
Nope.
They're like, oh yeah, but if you add us up all together, we've hosted five times. And Fred Armisen's wearing a very ill-fitting jacket.
Yeah, it's almost like a vest on him.
Yeah, John Hamm points out that he's hosted three times, or the last time in 2010. And really, we need to bring John Hamm back, because he was a pretty spectacular host, as I recall.
He was a solid host. I mean, dare I say, he might have maybe could have even been a cast member.
He's that good. He is that good and that handsome and that charming. I want two things. I want actually, let me amend that. I want three things. I want Paul Appel to host SNL. I want John Hamm to come back and host SNL. And I want John Hamm to do another Fletch movie or two.
Yes. And then I want all the children in the world to hold hands.
Right.
on Christmas Eve.
Right. And then uninterrupted 31-day orgasm thing. Let's get on that.
And death to all my enemies. They should burn like dogs in hell.
Yes.
We get each other, John. We get each other.
Yeah. But that was fun. It's fun seeing the cameos. And it's fun seeing Martin Short, like, genuinely cracking up Lorne.
I think I saw, like, our good friend Minute Moradi mention that. Like, how, like, Lorne's been in this business for 50 years. He's been around every type of comedian. But Martin Short can still crack him up.
Yeah.
Like, at this late stage in the game. That just speaks to the magic of Martin Short.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just fun to see Lorne genuinely losing it, because you never really see that.
He's very stoic.
Yes. So Matt Damon comes on stage. He offers Kristen his jacket. And then he's presented with another jacket because he did a cameo as Brett Kavanaugh a few years back.
Yeah, it's like, oh, remember Kavanaugh? And they just gave him the jacket. And it's like, oh, no.
Put that rapist on the Supreme Court.
Remember that? Hey. That was crazy. Wild times.
But, you know, he keeps calendars, so, you know, therefore he can't rape.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm still salty about that.
Yeah, no, as you should be, as we all should be.
Yeah.
But
I like, he gets another jacket and he's like, oh, this is great. I can give it to my daughter.
Give it to my kids.
Yeah.
But then, like, we see Kristen being despondent. He's like, oh, this jacket doesn't mean anything now. Like, you just give it out. And then we see Matt trying to, you know, make her a little bit happy by saying, oh, yeah, no, aren't you, like, the youngest five-timer in the club? And she's like, well, no, because Emma Stone was here a few weeks ago. She's actually it. And
right.
And Matt is like, well, aren't you the first woman in the five-timers club?
I literally just said Emma Stone.
And then he says, well, maybe you're the first French woman?
Yeah.
And then he's like, no, I'm not French at all. But although, after seeing this is like a little bit of foreshadowing for our 10-1, now that I think about it.
Yeah, true. This episode has layers.
Absolutely.
And then all the guys, they sing a song about how she deserves a jacket. Although Paul Appel doesn't get up there for some reason. I don't know what that was about.
What's that about?
I guess because she wasn't wearing a five-timer jacket. She was just dressed as Paul Appel. Maybe that was it.
Maybe, I guess.
Yeah. Now that I think about it, I just answered my own question.
There you go. But as they sing to her and serenade her, tell her how great she is, I think at the last minute, Will Forte looks to his side like, oh my God, is that Ryan Gosling? Cut to Lauren Given, Ryan Gosling, next week's host, a five-timer's jacket.
Yeah, and he's like, is this okay? I haven't even hosted three times. And Lauren's like, oh, no, it's fine. Here.
Just take it.
Yeah, and then he, Ryan Gosling, of course, you know, gets up on stage and, on home base and presents Kristen with her jacket. Yeah, so this was cute. I mean, it's always, it's really gratuitous when we have all those celebrity cameos, but it's kind of become an expected thing in the Five Timers Club sketches. And I like that they had a decent twist this time, where the premise is that the Five Timers Club is getting really devalued because there are like probably a couple dozen people in it now.
I'll look it up. I know SNL, SNN rather put up a thing, but yeah, like I will.
I'll, in that neighborhood at the very least.
Yeah, but I'll co-sign what you said. Like normally, I'll be like, I kind of roll my eyes, like, oh, another cameo-filled cold open. What is this? But like, I do like the fact that they at least they had like a bit of a twist on it.
Yeah,
and I don't know. All the guys up there seem to be having fun. I enjoy all those guys, and of course Kristen Wiig. So
yeah, and they all seem to have genuine affection for Kristen Wiig too.
Yeah, so. And it was like a genuinely funny monologue, and the fact, like you said, like they had that little twist on it, made me kind of be like, okay, all right, I'll overlook
we're not made of stone, people.
Yeah, I mean John Hamm and Paul Rudd. I mean, come on, and Forte and Shore. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, my God.
And Armisen. And Paul LaPelle. And Ryan Gosling. I mean, he's a beautiful, beautiful man. He's got kimchi. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, look at those cheekbones. I mean, maron.
Yeah. I mean, how great was he at the Oscars? Seriously.
Ooh-wee.
Anyway, nice. Yeah. So this was fun. This was fun.
Good monologue. I was like, okay, we're back on track. Here we go.
Yep. First sketch, Jumanji. We got, you know, like a little dinner party thing going on. Diz Mukes is introducing his new girlfriend to his friends.
Oh, no, it's J.A.J., actually.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I don't know why I said Diz Mukes. Well, Diz Mukes plays a significant part in this sketch. That's why.
Oh,
I was picturing James Austin Johnson in my head, and then Diz Mukes came out of my mouth. I don't know why. Yeah.
Dirty.
But Diz Mukes, who's the host, he's like, hey, I've got this new board game we can try. It's called Ticket to Ride, and it's a train themed board game.
Yeah, it's an actual board game too.
Oh, is it?
Yes. Okay. I believe I played it with some friends of mine at a house party somebody. But yeah, this board game actually exists.
We used to get together occasionally and play the board games.
Oh, we did do that, like back in the before times.
Yeah, we did. It kind of fell off after COVID and lockdown and all that, and we never really got back to it with our friends who were who we would get together and play with. And unfortunately, our friend Matt got Jumanji'd, so that was kind of a bad thing. We try not to talk about it a lot, but
we love you, Matt.
Yeah,
thinking of you.
Yeah,
pour our little liquor.
Big ups to our friend and buddy Matt Jenkins. Should have on the show sometime.
We should. We gotta
figure it out. It's
like maybe a movie. Anyway. We all like. But anyway. So we find out like Diz Mukes wants to play a board game with everybody called Ticket to Ride. Everybody's into it except for Kristen Wiig's character. And the JJ explains she has this thing about board games. She's not into them. She doesn't like them because she doesn't have a fear of board game, but she, like you said, is afraid of being Jumanji. And I like the fact as soon as she says that, everybody like in the audience understood what she meant.
Yeah. And I like how they got kind of sidetracked into like, oh, well, you know, that was a video game. And they're like, we're not talking about the new Jumanji. We're talking about the original Jumanji.
The true Jumanji.
And
talking about the true Jumanji.
Yeah. And then Diz Mukes goes on to this whole tangent where he's arguing that Jumanji comes out of the game. That's being Jumanji. That's not being sucked into the game, which is what most people think of as Jumanji.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I do love the heightening of this sketch where, like, she talks, like, like I said, like she's talked about how she has this very, very big fear of being Jumanji'd. I think Bowen, who's also there, is like, well, that's a made up thing. That doesn't really happen. She says, you don't know that.
And you can't prove that. Yeah.
Yeah. And like she genuinely has like a strong concern about this, about being Jumanji'd, and everybody's coming at her about how ridiculous it is to have this fear of being Jumanji. And it's like,
yeah,
it almost reminded me of like the Weezer sketch with Matt Damon, where mm-hmm. they were having this big argument over something that's so ridiculous, but
intensely
like
trivial. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a kind of, it's a ridiculous trivial thing, but they're having this really heated, passionate discussion about
it's life and death. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And like, they're talking,
yeah, you know, when I first watched this, I wasn't too nuts about it because I was like, I like the idea of this, but it just became everybody saying Jumanji'd a lot.
There was that too, but I don't know.
But it grew on me the second time I watched it. When I watched it a second time for the podcast, I was like, you know what, this is pretty solid.
Yeah, I think also like the way Kristen Wiig was selling it helped it too. Like talking mm-hmm. about, yeah, Jumanji is a number of jungle emergencies. Jungle, yes. We are not prepared for that. We don't have the resources for that. And like you're all talking to me like I'm crazy, like I'm a nut, that I don't want to get Jumanji.
Yeah, yeah. And a thing that really elevated the sketch for me too was at the end they open up the Ticket to Ride game, and then Will Forte comes out as like an engineer, an old fashioned train conductor,
right?
And he just leans into the absurdity so hard. That really kicked it up another notch for me. And he's also like, okay, I'm going to suck everyone into the game, except for you, Kristen Wiig, because you specifically said you didn't want to get Jumanji.
You are free to go.
And I like that they had the gates, you know, come down like at a train crossing.
Oh yeah. The train crossing, dividers.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I really like this sketch quite a bit. I also liked how Dismukes was kind of bringing his own, like, heightening energy into the sketch too. She was almost match. I would say he was matching Kristen Wiig, like, as far as mm-hmm. heightening the situation too. Like you said, like, yeah, he was talking about, well, no, well, actually with Jumanji, that Jumanji comes out. Jumanji comes out of, into Jumanji. So are you afraid of things coming out of Jumanji, or are you afraid of getting Jumanji in to Jumanji?
Yeah.
And then, of course, she's like, well, no, Robin Williams got sucked in the game. He's like, all right, one guy in the history of Jumanji got sucked in. Everything comes out. And, like, it was this whole thing where,
yeah,
like you said, like, they were saying Jumanji over and over and over again. But, like, everybody was just, like, really serious about this trivial or seemingly silly thing about Jumanji and, like, heightening it. Like it's almost like they're talking about politics or some shit.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That made it like so damn funny, this one.
Yeah, and I think it was like a pretty perfect use of Will Forte at the end and his unique energy too.
Yes, absolutely.
It did make me kind of wish that we could have had another thing with that used Dismukes and Forte, because I feel like their comedic voices would mesh very well because they're both very odd and off the beaten path, and I'd just like to see a big Dismukes Forte sketch.
You know what? I'll co-sign on that.
Yeah. For and sure. I know it wasn't Forte's show, so, you know, we right. couldn't really expect to see more of him than we did, but
yeah,
I really want to see those two together. I bet they could make something really cool and yeah, something like we haven't seen before.
Yeah. Like maybe, I mean, I would say like before this show tonight, like that probably might not have happened because like the first time, mm-hmm, Forte hosted, it wasn't that great an episode, but I think on this episode, on Kristen Wiig's episode of all episodes, like we saw like the Forte that we wanted to see when he hosted, like,
yeah,
in, like in the, you know, in the monologue in this sketch, and of course in another sketch coming up, we were like, oh, that's the Forte we wanted. That's,
yeah, like watching him just breeze in, be weird, and yeah, you know, fuck off quickly.
Exactly. So who knows? Maybe because he was so well received in this episode, maybe they'll bring him back to host in the future. I don't know. But I would like to see a Forte Dismukes mashup, of course.
Yeah, that would be a lot of fun, I think.
Yeah, but I really like the sketch. I'm gonna say for me, probably sketch of the night. There are a couple that come. I don't know. There's some other strong contenders, but we'll get into it. But I enjoyed
it. I'm looking through my list right now. Yeah, I'm still not sure. Maybe I'll figure it out over the course of this episode.
We'll okay.
See. Let's go. So next we got a pre-tape. We got Pilates. We got Molly and Chloe Fineman, and they're going to a Pilates class, and it's cut like a movie trailer, like shot like a horror movie, and
yeah, like a Blumhouse thing.
Yeah. Yeah, and they're just like, oh, you know, there's this device that it looks like it could be a torture device and maybe also a sex device.
Yeah. And I mean, it's basically like all the things you associated with Pilates classes, but made to look like a horror film type of pastiche. You know, like,
it's so hard to get the hang of it, and, you know, it seems so advanced, and we got 8 gorgeous women, 1 gay man not wearing underwear. And
Kaia Gerber, who I
guess is a name I'm supposed to recognize.
I didn't know who that was either till I looked it up. So did a little research. Like, yeah, because like it was like a very random person to mention. Like, who is that? Why is she in here? Mm-hmm. So Kaia Gerber apparently is a model / actress, and is the daughter of Cindy Crawford. And
she's
also in Palm Royale with Kristen Wiig. And she's going to be in the new SNL 1975 film coming out. I think she plays, I believe, Carlin. Not George Carlin, but like, let me look it up. She's going to be.
It was Carlin's wife, wasn't it?
I believe so, yeah. So she's going to be there. And before you ask people, yes, Kaia Gerber did date Pete Davidson.
Wow, this was a journey.
That's what it said in Wikipedia. I don't know what to tell you.
I don't think I even knew that Cindy Crawford had kids. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Was that when she was with Richard Gere? They were like married for a while, right?
Possibly. Yeah. So Kaia Gerber, she's playing Jacqueline Carlin in SNL 1975.
Huh.
So, yeah, I mean,
I find this fascinating now. Okay. I was just like, oh, well, it's somebody that they name that they presume I know, and I do not.
Yeah. I mean, she was in the film Bottoms recently with Ayo Edebiri and whatnot. But yeah, it was a very random cameo to just throw in there. I was like, all right, I guess it's because she's in the Apple TV show with Kristen Wiig. But and it was also quick enough that it wasn't super distracting, I guess.
No, it was. I was just like, "Oh, who's that? Oh, I don't know." Okay, we're on to the next thing.
Yes, very much so. Wait. So let me see who's. Oh yeah, no. Her dad isn't. Her dad is Randy Gerber.
Well, that checks out. You know, same last name and stuff.
Yep.
Any relation to the Gerber baby food people?
No, Randy Gerber founded the tequila brand Casamigos alongside actor George Clooney.
This thing has just taken so many turns. What the hell, man?
I know, it's
a 5-second cameo on SNL. We got Cindy Crawford's daughter who's dating Pete Davidson, and her dad founded a tequila company with George Clooney. What the hell? What is going on?
No,
this is crazy pants.
So she dated Pete Davidson. I think it was like literally for like a year. Then she dated Jacob Elordi, and looks like she's currently dating maybe Austin Butler. So she likes tall, lanky dudes.
Okay.
So shoot your shot, Dev Patel.
All right.
Pilates. Yeah, the sketch. What do we think?
It was okay. I liked how Molly got kind of transformed into one of them, like a pod person or something. Where Molly was their character was you know, hey, Mamacita. It was okay. It didn't send me in a big way, but it was. It was quick and it passed the time agreeably enough.
Yeah, I agree. It was, I thought it was okay. It was kind of, I mean, I'm not really super familiar with Pilates classes. Like, yeah. I really, honestly, if I'm being honest, I didn't quite know what Pilates was until I saw the sketch. Mm-hmm. I thought it was like maybe like a jazzercise type of thing, but apparently not. But yeah, so like I wasn't too familiar with all the terminology. So like, I mean, this kind of caught me up. But yeah, like I didn't think the jokes were super strong. The one I did kind of get a kick out of was when they were doing a class with 1 pound weights, and mm-hmm. Punky was like, 1 pound weights, that's going to be nothing.
Cut to her. And like, then cut to her being covered with a sheet.
Yes, her dead on the floor.
Yeah.
It's like, oh,
yeah,
I hate it when they die like that.
Yeah, and we also have cutaways to like Sarah sort of like telling Chloe Fineman like how horrible and horrifying it is. I don't know. I this is one of those things I probably found more interesting from a technical standpoint than from a humor standpoint, you know?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. Like,
it was well shot. It was well put together. And...
Yeah, I would agree with that. Overall, I thought it was okay, but definitely nothing to write home about.
Yeah. All right, next sketch, we got Secretaries. This is a bit of a return with Heidi Gardner's character. She's done this at least once before, I believe.
Yes, she did this on the Pete Davidson episode earlier this season.
Ooh, and appropriately enough, we've got John Hamm, Madman star John Hamm, mm-hmm. in there, and you know he of course slips right into place,
right?
Because he's playing a very Don Draper type. He comes out with Bowen and his who's just hired his firm, and he's like, "Oh well, I have my secretary Trudy here who gets things wrong 50% of the time. So I hired a second secretary who also gets things wrong." And we've got Trudy and Tootie.
Right. So basically like another Trudy, and we see Kristen Wiig just dressed just like Trudy and mm-hmm. getting things wrong like Trudy. Like at one point.
Talking in that old fashioned voice like Trudy.
"Hey there, boss. What's going on? What's the skinny fellas?"
And they offer to make them a bourbon on the racks, which is not like on the rocks. This is, they are mixing the bourbon by holding the shaker between their chests.
Yes.
and they start like sort of just shaking to mix the drink. And then they're like, "Oh wait, do you want it stirred?" And then they just sort of start oscillating instead.
Yes, very much so. I think at one point, John Hamm asks Trudy, like, "Oh, Tootie, can you pick up? And then she finishes a sentence for her saying, "Oh, your son from daycare?" And then she proceeds to pull a baby out of a filing cabinet.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. So that just lets you know where this sketch is. This is just a big old silly time.
We're getting nice and absurd. Trudy and Tootie also warm a panini between their butts.
Panini, that's a sandwich of the future.
And I like that when Tootie collapses onto the desk doesn't really give away properly. It doesn't collapse the way it should, which is kind of hilarious and makes the actors break a little bit.
Yeah.
It kind of like half caves in, and then so Kristen Wiig has to like kind of basically throw herself on it again to make it collapse the way it was supposed to.
Yeah, like the first time she did it. Like, halfway filmed it, and so she had to like jump up again and break it.
Yeah, and like Heidi Gardner seemed to have similar trouble when she had to fall through the wall towards the end of the sketch. It didn't seem to be collapsing as strongly as it should have. So
yeah, because like I think towards the end, she somehow her top flies off into space, and she has a globe land on her head.
Yeah,
and so. I think,
which I think something like that happened in the first sketch too.
Yeah, in the first sketch,
I vaguely remember her losing some clothing. So
yeah, you do. But yeah. that's
I was trying to say it in a non-creepy way.
I was not.
And you were covering the creepy side. Okay.
Hey, all right. But yeah, then like that was pretty hilarious too. Like where she's supposed to fall through the wall behind her, but that doesn't quite give way. So she kind of like gets stuck with the globe on her head halfway through the wall.
And it kind of comes off her head, and I don't know if that was supposed to happen.
It's
fun to see the cast breaking a bit. But it wasn't like it in a totally intrusive way. I mean, it was just a fun, like, you know, you can't predict this sort of way.
Yeah.
I enjoyed this. I enjoyed the old fashionedness of it. I enjoyed the absurdity of it. I'm a sucker for things where people are talking like this, like an old 1940s movie. See,
yeah. Hey there, the big palooka. I'll show you what for.
Yeah, I mean that was fun. I wouldn't mind seeing them do another one of these, I suppose, if they could find another twist on it.
I think this might have worked better than the Pete Davidson one, just because, like, with Chris and Wig and her energy balancing off of Heidi and her energy, that seemed to, I don't know, I thought this was funnier than the first.
They played off each other very well, and and it gave it a new twist, and it gave them a little extra oomph. Yeah,
for sure. Like, this definitely, I mean, it's definitely like a Gonzo, really ridiculous, silly sketch, but like, and just absurd beyond absurd. But yeah, I enjoyed this. I just leaned into the absurdity, and of course, the fact that none of the breakaway props worked the way they were supposed to. Just
right.
I got an extra chuckle out of that.
Yeah, I guess the crew did their job a little too well.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. So far this sketch is moving along pretty well.
This is it's shaping up to be a pretty good show. And next we have Retirement Party, where we have Kenan Thompson playing a fellow named Jerry who's retiring from whatever his business is. I don't think they ever specify what the business is.
No, they never say.
But we have just a bunch of people, a bunch of odd characters coming up and saying odd things.
Well, this sketch was written by Steve Castillo and Colin Jost. Mm-hmm. I should also say the secretary sketch was Mike DiCenzo, Heidi Gardner, Jimmy Fowley, Jake Nordwin, and Sierra O'Sullivan. With Retirement Party, this was kind of something they did quite a bit, like, you know, back in the Chris and Wig time, where they were having some event, and it was just like a cavalcade of people just coming up to the mic wanting to
like speaking at a funeral or giving toast at a wedding. Yeah, stuff like that.
Exactly. So we kind of get that here. The first one we have is Bowen Yang's like oddball character. He's like in a suit, but he has like curly hair and a big bow in it. Mm-hmm. And he talks about his service chinchilla who got stuck in an industrial fan and was tragically killed to death.
Yes.
And how Jerry helped clean up the dog's intestines and put him in a Starbucks mug and clean up the rest, which could only be described as chum.
Yes. Then we have the improv troupe Gits and Shiggles.
That's a great name.
That's a terrific name. And that's such a great inane improv troupe name. And I say this as somebody who used to be in an improv troupe. And we have Punky, Chloe Fineman, and Paul Rudd. Paul Rudd, I was amazed because they put Paul Rudd in like a Jufro thing.
Yeah.
I was kind of amazed at how much that changed his appearance. Like that and the beard, he looked so different to me.
Like, who are you?
Yeah. But that was fun. They were like, hey, you know, we've been asked not to perform any improv and we're not going to unless people have suggestions.
Okay, I heard a quinceañera and R. Kelly.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, no.
Yeah, just a fun, quick thing. And again, we're using the cameo people really well. They're just coming in for a quick bit. They just come in quick, boom, score, and then they're out of there.
Yeah, Matt Damon comes in as introduces himself as Matt Damon from The Legend of Bagger Vance.
Which I kind of loved. That's hilarious.
It's like, why that movie?
Such an obscure credit of his. And I remember that movie. I saw that movie in the theater.
Oh, wow. All right.
Him, Charlize Theron, we had Will Smith playing a magical Negro part who helps Bagger Vance, Matt Damon's Bagger Vance, get really good at golf.
Yes, I remember, I never saw that movie, but I do remember it. It was like kind of like Oscar baity type of film.
Kind of was. I don't remember too much else about it. I feel like there was some like distinguished older actor in it, like Robert Duvall or somebody like that.
Ooh, let me look that up.
Yeah, I don't know if it was actually was Robert Duvall or just somebody of that type.
Okay, I'll find out right now. In the sketch, Fred Armisen pops up.
Maybe Gene Hackman. Could have been a Gene Hackman.
Okay, maybe.
This is going to drive me nuts now.
I'm looking it up now. Don't worry about a thing. I'm on it. I'm on it, boss. Right.
Yeah, I can't go back to the sketch until I find out who the distinguished older actor was in The Legend of Bagger Vance.
All right, Will Smith, Matt Damon, Charlize Theron, Bruce McGill. Who
was it? Bruce McGill? Was I thinking of Bruce McGill?
Maybe.
Bruce McGill from Animal House?
That must be it. I don't, the other names I don't recognize. Joel Gretsch? J. Michael Moncrief?
Oh, you know who else I think was in it? I think Peter Garrity was in that movie.
Legend of Bagger Vance?
Yeah, I think he was in it.
Yes, he was. Yeah. Correct.
He was a cast member on one of my favorite shows, Homicide: Life on the Street. He played Garrity. So Garrity played Garrity. And yeah, maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I'm looking through the cast list now. I don't see any Duvall or Hackman or
nobody of that stature. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, there's a bunch of people in it, but they're not like
notably. I'm probably thinking of Peter Garrity.
Yeah. Michael O'Neill, Thomas J. Ryan, Dermot Crowley.
Yeah. Okay. We're in the weeds now.
Yeah. We really are in the weeds. Wow. We really went down a rabbit hole here.
All right. Anyway, we also had Fred Armisen. Who came on, ranted against HR.
Yeah.
And apparently he's been hooking up with Wendy from security on everybody's desks.
Yeah. HR is here, aka the sex police.
Yeah. And we briefly see Sarah Sherman as Wendy from security, who just gives him kind of a wink and a nod. That was about all we saw her. Oh no, wait, she was in the Pilates thing. So she popped up a little more than I was remembering.
Yeah, there wasn't a ton of Sarah Sherman in this episode, and no Michael Longfellow either, which was kind of...
No Michael Longfellow, no Please Don't Destroy.
No. Womp womp. But in this sketch, we do get a kind of a reoccurring character for Kristen Wiig, Gail, the woman with the oxygen tank, who also wants to say a few words. How Jerry has been stealing from the company. He stole our hearts.
Aww.
He also assaulted me. With guidance and information.
Yeah.
Then Marcello comes in. He's a guy from sales who just farts into the microphone. Class act.
Sure.
And then we have Will Forte come in as this another reoccurring character who pops up in these type of format sketch. Hamilton Whiteman.
Yeah.
Who you may not remember, but he's been...
No, he looked very familiar. I was like, I've seen him do this before.
Yeah, he's basically a white supremacist. Because he always kind of comes up and says something bit like very, very code. Like, I think there was like at the wedding sketch from back in the day, he's like, oh, happy to see this beautiful, pure white Anglo-Saxon marriage take place.
Okay, I didn't remember that. And he didn't really do anything like that in this sketch, as I recall. He just talked about how death is in this room. And how, like, even after you die, you can feel the worms eating you.
Yeah.
So he was very morbid, but I don't remember him being, like, actually racist.
Yeah, no. The closest the closest he said was, like, you know, that's just my 2 cents. But in this world, 2 cents won't buy you much. In this world ruled by Joseph Hussein Biden.
Yeah.
Which was pretty fantastic. Yeah, I got a kick out of this sketch. I mean, this sketch went on a little bit longer than most sketches. It's about 7 minutes, but it didn't feel like it.
It didn't feel like it. It kind of zipped along because it's mostly just people coming up and doing quick bits.
Right. And of course, Will Forte's character, Hamilton Whiteman, admitting that he's the one that killed the chinchilla at the beginning of the sketch.
Yeah, bringing it all together. Yes.
Yes. Really tying a room together.
Mm-hmm.
Another solid sketch, I'd say.
I enjoyed this. I mean, the sketches were, you know, it's like the rapid fire, you know, stream of people come up and do weird stuff. Those can be hit and miss just by their nature. But this worked pretty well, I'd say.
Yeah. Like, I mean, we've seen sketches like this where, like you said, it's like a carnival merry-go-round of zany characters. And it can feel, like you said, kind of hit and miss, or it feels like, all right, well, when are they going to wrap this up? But I don't know. I felt like in this episode, it was like there was a strong energy, like a vibe that were like, I don't know, people were just like kind of on their game.
I agree. And I'm really surprised when you said that was 7 minutes, because it did not feel like 7 minutes, which is...
Yeah, no, I'm looking at
works in its favor.
I'm looking it up on YouTube right now. 7 minutes, 15 seconds.
Nice.
Nice, nice.
All right. Well, next we have our musical guest for the week, Ray.
Yes, she did 2 songs. She did Escapism and Worth It, which I believe Worth It was like also a medley of another song as well.
Yeah.
Ray.
I wasn't really familiar with her, but it was interesting. She, you know, did a little scatting.
Yeah, yeah. I wasn't super familiar with her either. She's from the UK, so she's kind of made a big splash over there. So she's kind of trying to, I guess, maybe break into the States, as they say. Yeah. And
she's doing the scans. You know, it's like that.
There's a lot of that. It was like a lot of kind of jazz standard type of vibe. But then again, she kind of did like kind of singing. I am the scat man. But she definitely has... Wow.
So kind of like that. Yeah.
It's like Randy Newman's in the room with me. Great.
Randy Newman's the first name you come up with for scats again?
Yep.
Okay. All right.
You know what? I liked her performances quite a bit. Like, she definitely gave me kind of...
I enjoyed her. Yeah.
Yeah, like Amy Winehouse, Duffy. If you remember Duffy.
I remember Duffy.
Yeah. She gave me like kind of vibes like that, where it's like kind of like an old school, like I said, jazz standards type of vibe, but also kind of modernized a little bit for like modern pop sensibilities. And she was like strong performer. Like this is one of those things where like a strong musical performance can really elevate the entire show. And I really think she did that. This was a total 180.
Really pulled the room together.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. You get it. But yeah, this was like a total 180 from what like Travis Scott, I thought, did last.
Yeah. Did not care for the Travis Scott.
Yeah. Like he was like kind of shaking the camera around to make his stuff look more exciting than it actually was. Whereas Ray was just, the camera was just like in a few spots. And
this is what I want from a musical guest. I don't need like the huge production value that they've been leaning into. I just need like a strong performer to sing like a cool song, and that's what I got. And
exactly. Fun. Like all the other performers that do like all these bells and whistles to like distract you from the fact that their performance ain't great. Like a real, I said it. Shots fired. But like with her, she's just like, I just need my band behind me and my backup singers, and I'll perform and carry the rest. And sure enough, she did. Very strong performer. Very impressed by both her performances. Strong voice, strong singer. Thumbs up all the way, for sure.
Thumbs up. Two thumbs up. Mm-hmm. Nice going, Ray.
Yeah.
All right.
What just popped in there, Ray?
What did you do, Ray?
I couldn't help it.
All right, next we got Weekend Update with Colin Jost, Michael Che. Following Ray
Che. Okay.
So they're talking about the news of the week. Apparently, I had not heard about this story. Apparently, Trump claimed that Biden was high on cocaine during the State of the Union address, which, you know, every accusation is actually a confession with these people. So
game recognizes game.
You do the math.
Absolutely.
And they were like, oh, so Trump knows what it's like to be high on cocaine. and when delivering a speech where you have like lots of energy at the beginning, and then they show a clip of him dancing to YMCA, and then they show him just petering out at one of his rallies. And
Riding that train high on cocaine.
Yeah. I believe it. Seems plausible. Like a plausible theory.
Sounds about right. Joe's had a couple of good jokes in there. I liked how he talked about there was a schizophrenic man who got a support dog to sort of help him differentiate what was real and what was not. But here's the crazy thing is there is no dog.
Dun, dun, dun.
I like that one.
I enjoyed Jay's. He was talking about how, you know, the women's college basketball has been really popular. And he said, you know, in this game got a record 14.2 million viewers, which beat their previous record by 14.2 million viewers. It's just, I enjoy when Jay puts on the mock sexist hat.
Yeah, we get it every episode.
It's just so fun. And it's become one of the reliable things about Weekend Update. So I enjoy that.
Yeah. There was that one joke about how this summer, like trillions of cicadas will be immigrating into the United States. And yeah. Biden's just letting them in.
Yeah. That was good.
I like that. And of course, the one about the mouse in Portugal, whose embryo was fused where they had the legs put where the genitals should be. And mm-hmm. he's just like, yeah, same guy. And he goes to high five Jost.
Yeah. And Jost is like, you have genitals the size of a mouse leg?
Oh, wait, no, no, I don't.
He's like, no, I take that back. Yeah, that they played that very spontaneous.
Yes, very good.
That was cute. And then going back to the earthquake story that we talked about earlier, we had Marcelo pop up as the earthquake.
Yeah, he came out in like a leotard with like a little Richter scale line across him, and mm-hmm. the entire like skyline of New York City balanced on his head with the on yeah. springs. And
honestly, at the beginning, it was kind of like, it was kind of bugging me because like they kept calling him the New York earthquake. And I was like, look, folks, the epicenter was here in New Jersey, not yeah. New York. And I don't know why I'm getting possessive about an earthquake. That's a very silly thing to get possessive about, but I don't know. It seemed like stolen valor.
No, I get it. Like New York's just taking claim for everything from Jersey.
That's right. That's right. But like Jost was like, wait, didn't it originate in New Jersey? And he said, well, I grew up there, but I moved to the city. And I'm like, okay, all right, I forgive you now.
Big laugh from the audience as well. As
yeah. Should. Yeah. And then we had Keenan popping up as the eclipse, which, hey, may even be happening as you're listening to this on Monday afternoon.
Don't look up.
It is still in our future. So, yeah, this is, you know, before the world ended.
Yes. before it all went to shit.
Yeah. So we have Keenan as the eclipse, as Monday's eclipse, and he and Marcelo are sort of trash talking each other.
Yeah, they're basically, it's turning into like a wrestling promo between the two of them.
Yeah.
Like even at one point, Keenan says like, what you gonna do when the eclipse comes?
Ooh, boy. Yeah.
Which is
yeah.
exactly word for word what Hulk Hogan used to say back in the 80s.
Yeah, yeah.
And yeah, the two of them trash talking each other about like, oh, you making the earth shake? I'm bringing total darkness, brother. What do you, you know, and it's them going back and forth. Marcelo playing it up very big, Keenan playing mm-hmm. it up very big. Just two big personalities, just clashing.
Being big.
Yes, being big
together.
Big, brash, and bold. And then I guess at the end, the two of them think they should team up where there's like an earthquake and an eclipse. That's like the stuff that's biblical that people could like, you know, throw virgins into volcanoes over to sacrifice to the gods.
Sure. Yeah.
And then, of course, they ended on the joke saying, ah, don't worry, I'm sure Mayor Eric Adams has this all under control.
Yeah. He's not popular or well-liked.
No one likes him at all. He's trash.
Yes.
Yeah, overall, I thought this was okay. It definitely plays like, you know, Marcelo plays it up big, Keenan plays it up big. Like the dialogue isn't the best, but the both of them try to make a meal out of it and make it as they sell it as hard as they can.
Yeah. Yeah. I like the gag about, you know, I grew up there, but I moved to the city.
That was a good gag. I did like that. Yeah. I did like that.
That was a good gag. Cause I sincerely was like, hey, that was New Jersey's earthquake, man. You felt it in New York, but it was our earthquake.
Let us have our earthquake.
I forget where the epicenter was, but it was somewhere here.
I believe it was Lebanon, I want to say. It's like northern New Jersey. I believe it was Lebanon, yeah. If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, it wasn't too far from us, I don't think.
Right. Absolutely.
Then we had a returning character. We had Kristen Wiig coming back as Aunt Linda, who would always do movie reviews and be like, and just not really get the movies, and she'd be like, what?
Yeah. So then we have Kristen Wiig come out as her character. I've always thought Aunt Linda was, I liked her enough, but I don't know if
it was never one of my favorites.
Yeah, but she definitely plays it up big, like, oh god, like yeah. like a lot of
slamming the desk, man.
That yeah, I did notice that. Like she kind of went to that slamming desk well a little bit one too many times, and just
yeah,
just a lot of mugging, like almost all mugging. Oops, all mugging.
There's a lot of, you know, if you enjoy the Kristen Wiig talking out of the side of her mouth, this is one of the characters for you.
Yeah. And of course she doesn't like things like Oppenheimer, directed by Christopher No Thanks. And yeah. Talks about Barbie, how that's, she doesn't like that. And Ryan Gosling, more like Ryan Gosling.
Yeah. He's very hard to make fun of.
He's hard to make fun of. I did like that joke, the Ryan Gosling.
I like that. And I liked at the beginning, she said, you know, she just says to Colin, "Hello, Seth." And she's like, "Someone's had some work done." And then she's like, towards the end of it, she's startled by Che being there.
Like, "Where'd you get here?"
Yeah. So she thinks Oppenheimer is about the person who invented the microwave. The bear, she thinks, has a very misleading title because it's about neither a bear nor a roly-poly bearded gay man.
Yes.
but she did love Paw Patrol.
So, like, out of all things, Paw Patrol.
Yeah.
Quite random.
Yeah. This was okay. Like I said, it was never one of my favorite Kristen Wiig characters, but it was one that she hadn't done in a long, long time. I think her last appearance on the show was like 14 years ago or something like that.
Something like that. Yeah, it's definitely been over a decade. So, but yeah, overall, I got some laughs out of it. I wouldn't say this was a total dud for me. I did enjoy it. But yeah, overall, weekend update, not bad. Pretty strong.
Decent weekend update. Didn't blow me away, but decent enough. Passed the time agreeably.
Indeed, aye.
Next we have another sketch. This might have been my favorite of the week.
Ooh, interesting. About it.
This is go-karts. We got a mother and a father. They're taking their kid to Funland go-kart track. We got Andrew Dismukes as the kid. We got James Austin Johnson and Kristen Wiig as the parents.
Oh, now Chloe Trost is there too. It's her birthday. She's their daughter.
Well, yeah, but she's like a reveal later on.
Right.
So I was putting a pin in that.
Damn it! I'm sorry.
And you went and spoiled the surprise.
Damn it! I apologize. Well,
go ahead. Summarize it how you want to.
Christmas is ruined. I did it.
Yeah. But the Dismukes is like, "Oh, this has been the great day. We went to the amusement park. We've gone to all these rides and all this." And James Austin Johnson's like, "Well, that's good because we have a bad thing to tell you after the go-karts." And they're just vague. They never say what the bad thing is. And Dismukes is like, "No, I think I'd really rather hear the bad thing now." And
but they're like, no, you enjoy this first and then we'll tell you the bad thing.
Yeah. He's like, no, I'd really feel better if you tell me the bad thing now. And then, you know, and then they realize, oh, we didn't do the bumper boats. Should we do the bumper boats and then give them the bad news? And he's like, no, I'd really rather you tell me now. And yeah, then we have the reveal and they're like, oh, well, let Annie decide. And we see Chloe Trost and she's got like a sash and a little tiara. Because it's her birthday, and they're like, "You decide if you want the bad news now or later."
Yeah, and it's like, and then of course it keeps escalating. And it's like, "Oh wait, we should probably tell Sheila. We should
have Sheila over." And so, like, James Austin Johnson gets on his cell phone and he says, "It's the big C," and he invites her over. You know, you should be here when we tell them.
So, yeah,
can you meet us at Funland Go Kart Track? Okay.
Yeah, and then the kid's like, "Who's Sheila?" And it's like, "Well, she's part of the bad thing."
Yeah, and then he's like, "So, kids, how would you feel if I started drinking again?"
Which is such a funny thing to say. And then of course it's like, "You know, we're just gonna play up here. We want you to enjoy the evening or enjoy the day. So we won't tell you when we're gonna let you know the bad things. But just be ready for it, and just know that we're gonna tell you a bad thing. But enjoy the day."
Yeah, so, yeah. And, you know, the implication is that the parents are getting divorced because Kristen Wiig is like, "Hey, if we were, like, all in a swimming pool and we were at either end, which one would you swim to first?"
I dug this sketch. Like, it's one of those things where it's, a bit of a slow simmer with this guy. Just that.
Yeah. Played. I dig it too. I think the performance has really elevated it too.
Yeah, for sure. Like,
they did a nice job. It's rare that you see people on SNL like underplaying stuff, but they did a great job of underplaying it because you know, that's where the humor was.
Yeah, I wish I'd see more than when they underplay sketches, because they do it really well. Like, I thought, like, Kristen Wiig was great. The way she was playing off of JAJ was great. JJ was great. And even like, well, Mikey Day, who's just the attendant at the go-karts, and we see him like with spiky blonde hair and a rat tail. Even he was good in his
life. I didn't notice he had a rat tail. That's funny.
He has a rat tail. Check it out.
Nice.
But yeah, even they were good. Like, I like kind of quiet, understated stuff like this where, I don't know if this came from one of the writers, like, real life traumas or anything.
Like maybe they're unpacking some stuff.
Yeah, it's like,
I mean, this is the sort of thing that you can do deeper in the show because it's more of a low key sort of thing. You know, the beginning of the show, you want the bigger energy sketches, and
right,
you know, but you can do some stuff that's more off the beaten path deeper into the show. You know, the next to last sketch.
Yes, so. absolutely. But yeah, solid sketch. I dug this one. I got a kick out of it.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And our 10-1, we got La Maison du Bain.
La Maison du Bain.
Which, according to Google Translate, means the House of Bang.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Nice. This was, we've got Ego hosting a PBS show called Sonic Pioneers, and she's doing sort of a retrospective on the 70s dance show from France. I wish we had somebody who could speak French on the show to just kind of like rate how well they did in their French.
Kristen Wiig is French, according to Matt Damon. So
this is true. That's true.
This sketch was written by Sierra O'Sullivan and Brian Tucker.
Okay. And it's we got Bowen and Chloe Fineman. They're playing a couple. They host a dance show that's disco Euro pop, sort of ABBA-y.
Yeah, it kind of reminded me of like those, like you said, like ABBA, like those 70s variety shows that were like super cheesy, full of song and dancing. Almost like if you're like all you listeners out there, if you remember the show Viva Variety, it seemed like like one of those shows that Viva Variety was making fun of.
Yeah.
Like one of those European 70s variety shows.
We've got a young boy serving champagne.
Yeah, champagne du bébé.
And Ego helpfully explains that in France at the time, the smoking age was 11 for girls and 4 for boys.
Yeah, I got a kick out of that just because it was a small child with a cigarette mustache and holding a glass of champagne.
Yeah, and I just like that we had an actual small child that we're keeping up to nearly 1 in the morning.
Yes, and his line was, merci.
Yeah.
Like, hello, champagne du bébé.
So then after that, we got kind of a rapid fire, you know, wacky characters. We got Kristen Wiig as this musician who did a
Tippy Tornado
song called Help, You're Making Me Dance.
Yes. And then it's Kristen Wiig kind of doing her funky gyrations.
Yeah.
It's very much like, if you remember that one character she had
when she played the triangle.
Yes. Dude, you read my mind. It's
yeah, she was the same moves. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's like her kind of moving her hips and awkwardly.
A lot
moving.
Of hip action.
Yeah. And saying, you know, let dance. Yeah. Yeah. You got to see
Chloe
it.
Chloe Toast as a singer who contracts emphysema in real time.
Yes. Coco Dubois.
We have. James Lawson Johnson and Dismukes as a duo.
Les Garçons du Groove, or the Groove Boys.
Yes.
And then just them singing La Papillon.
We have Keenan as a character who he sings a song like we know, and he's like pointing out which members of the audience he wants to come back to his dressing room.
Yes, very much so. And then we have Mikey Day as a mime, Spirou, who mimes way too close to the camera.
Yes. Yeah. I like that gag.
That was a good gag. Cute.
You know, we're basically just seeing his head and shoulders and we can't see most of his miming.
Yes. Absolutely.
And I like the throwaway line at the end that, you know, the show was canceled when the couple divorced due to irreconcilable murder.
It's a good line. I also like the one line where Ego is introducing herself as Iman Celeste. I wanted to be a singer, but now I do this.
Yeah.
That's a little peek into the mind of Iman Celeste.
This is kind of the fun, wacky absurdity that you want in 10 to 1 land. So
yeah, I think like
it worked pretty well.
Yeah, the first time I watched it, I was like, I don't know, this is kind of dumb. But the second, which it is, but the second time I watched it, I it grew on me. I had more fun with it.
There's a beauty in the dumbness.
There is a beauty in this dumbness. You know, let dance.
Yeah.
And this her just gyrating hips and
awkward. And then and she even shows up with the host, with Ego, even though it's like, you know, decades in the future.
Let dance.
Not my favorite thing of the night, but you know, it was decent enough to end on.
Yeah, I enjoyed the ridiculousness of it. If just not to see, because when JAJ and Dismukes were dancing as the Groove Boys and you could see Dismukes was really into it. He was like putting his elbows and shoulders and stuff.
And then Molly comes up out with a saxophone. That was cute.
Yes, and then of course then Kristen Wiig pops up saying let dance and does her dance, and that's when Ego says she became a regular on the show because she was actively squatting in the studio.
Yep.
Let dance.
Yeah, cute stuff. And then at Good Nights we got everybody on the stage and they're all wearing the Five Timers jackets, even the cast members.
Yeah. So pretty great show, I'd say.
Pretty solid show. Yeah, one of the better ones of the season, I think.
I think so. I mean, before, if you asked me what my favorite or what I thought was the strongest episode was for the season, I'd have to go back and look. I'd probably say the Nate Bargatze, but I think
that would probably be my choice.
This episode gives it a run for its money. I'll have to watch both, but this had a lot of stuff I thought that worked. And plus, it had like a really great energy to it throughout the whole thing. The musical guest Ray elevated the show, I thought, and this was a good one. This was a good one for sure.
Yeah, solid one. And it's it's nice when a beloved cast member comes back and they do a nice job and they get to revisit some of their old characters. We didn't have too much of that, which was nice.
Yeah, honestly. They didn't go too deep or too much into the. Which got the nostalgia well, and they kind of try to keep it new and do some more fresher stuff. The secretary sketch we saw already, but like, but the things like go-karts and Jumanji and Les Maisons du Debang was all pretty new stuff. So like, I did like that they were kind of trying out new stuff. And also part of me was like a little afraid because like they had all those, celebrity cameos in the beginning throughout the show. Yeah. I was like, well, although I do like that from time to time, but part of me thinking, well, then that means some of the regular cast members are going to get less screen time for the.
Yeah. And of course we didn't have a Please Don't Destroy sketch and Michael Longfellow didn't show up at all during the show, except during Good Nights, I don't think. But I don't feel like they used the people to excess beyond the monologue. People they popped up real quickly and I didn't feel like any of the celebrity cameos ever stayed their welcome.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think they flooded it too much where they just I didn't feel like it was like to speak like a stand-up comedian, like when a famous comedian does a drop in and bumps somebody. I don't feel like the whole entire cast got bumped fully out of this show.
Yeah. Okay, let's see what the people had to say. We got a lot of feedback on this episode, so people had things to say. We got our friend Jacob at darkmatter_362 says, wonderful episode, 4 out of 5. Ooh. Cold opens should be banned.
It wasn't great.
Hardcore. And he says, Jumanji was Gosling holding the cue cards because Kristen wouldn't stop staring at them.
Ooh, damn.
And he says, Pilates and retirement party were the best of the night.
Okay.
Doug's secretary this time because of Heidi and Kristen's chemistry.
I agree.
Go-karts, French show were both solid.
Let dance.
And then he says, I'll add that I thought the dependence on cameos for the Five Timers Club monologue shtick was getting old, but I had fun with this as well as the use of guests throughout the app.
Yeah, I think we kind of, I agreed on that. Like, normally I would say the cameo thing is gets a little old, but the fact that they kind of switched it up or found like a new kind of take on it made it a little bit more newer to me.
Yeah.
So our good friend John Anias at BurtonS92 says, this is how you do a gratuitous cameo fest in my book. I had a better time with this than most episodes this season. Beloved familiar faces used well. Three great sketches, Jumanji Retirement Party and Parents News, that's the go-kart sketch. A dynamite musical guest and an often jubilant vibe.
Hmm. Yeah.
I'd agree.
Quite like it.
I'd agree.
Our friend Manette Moratti at Manette M97 says, I didn't mind the cameos in the monologue or the fact that they were used throughout the first half of the show, but I am disappointed Paula Pell and Martin Short didn't jump in at any point after the monologue.
I would agree, yeah. Like, I would have liked to have seen them. Like, I mean, Martin Short, for sure. Like, he always... It's so weird with Martin Short, because, like, he's one of the... few like comedic people I know that like everybody just genuinely loves. Like, remember a while ago when somebody put out that article that like, oh, Martin Short's never been funny, and then just the internet united as one to tell that person, no, you're wrong, you fucking idiot.
You are demonstrably wrong. Yes, yeah. I do remember that.
He's like one of those guys where like boomers like him, Gen X likes him, millennials, Gen Z, like everybody from every generation thinks Martin Short is fantastic. That's great. That warms my heart.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, and speaking of like horrible takes on the internet, I assume you saw that thing that was floating around Twitter.
This
woman, she did, I think it was a TikTok. I think it originated as a TikTok
who
said like, is it just me or has like SNL never hired a hot female cast member? And I was like, what?
It took everything I had not to retweet that or respond, or I didn't want to put that even on our SNL network part, because I know what that is. I know that's just somebody saying something insanely wrong and outrageous just to go viral or just for engagement, because you get more engagement saying something outlandish than you do saying something like genuine or well thought out or clever. And I knew what that was. I was like, all right, this is bait. This is somebody just trying to get a rise out of people or trolling, or I don't want to be part of this because like I know.
That probably was it. I mean, because like she says oh, like her example, she put up a picture of Heidi Gardner and she was like, I don't know this person's name. And I'm like, well, then how did you find a fucking photo?
Thank you. None of this makes sense. This is all falls apart.
Yeah.
Hulk smash.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like, I mean, I saw
it. And you know, look, I was weak and I did respond. And okay. You know, I was.
You're only human.
I think I retweeted it. I didn't respond to the person directly, but I was like, you know, who are these, you know, like, you know, I don't know. It was just such a wrong take. And I did feel bad where the great stand-up comedian, Laurie Kilmartin, who's also written for Conan O'Brien, she like actually posted. She was like, you know, you don't have to post all the SNL cast members you find hot people. And I was like, okay, point well taken.
Yeah.
It's not about that.
Yeah, it's true. And also, I mean, first of all, not only is it a wrong take, but it's also extremely insulting to all the female cast members ever who've been on SNL. Like, why would you even say something like that? It's just wrong and stupid and dumb on every level. Like, on no level is this justifiable.
And I did see like Sarah Sherman and Chloe Trost both had humorous responses to that. Like, I think Sarah Sherman was like, oh, you know, just found out I'm not hot. So, you know, please appreciate your thoughts and prayers at this difficult time or something like that.
Yeah.
And Chloe Trost, I've forgotten her response, but it was also funny as I recall. But
I think she sang that song Beautiful by Christina Aguilera. But I mean, it's some stuff like that just bumped me out because it does work. Like, it did go viral. I think Entertainment Weekly did a write-up about it. And so she got the...
Oh, did they? Gosh.
So she got, like, the 15 minutes of fame she was looking for. But I was just like, ugh. People are gross.
People are stupid.
People are stupid and gross. But not us. We're fantastic.
We're wonderful. And you know, who else is wonderful is our listeners. Like Boardman gets paid at the Lion.
He told us. Yeah, he told us how this is pronounced.
He told us, we promptly forgot. And yeah, he's going to have to remind us every week just to fix it in our heads. He says, "Hey, guys, so I love this episode. The cameos were fun. Secretaries was hilarious. Glad to see Molly and Jackets for All."
Yay.
Also, I saw a Target commercial with Wig on Peacock, and I thought that was part of the show. LOL. Love you guys. Didn't see the Target commercial when I watched it, but okay.
Yeah, I think it's like a new commercial she put out where she is doing the Target lady for...
I heard that she did that. It's weird that they would air that during SNL.
Yeah, that could definitely throw people off.
That seemed like a conflict of interest to me, but...
Right. No, I could see that. We also got a tweet from American Cousin One saying, "I was hoping for the Californians," and she included a GIF of the Californians, which triggered me.
Yeah, American Cousin One, don't really know you offhand, but I think I'm safe in saying you're history's greatest monster.
I'll co-sign that. I was going to say you went too far, but I thought about it. I was like, nah.
No, it's the fucking Californians. Come on, man.
Yeah.
And we have Techie at Uncle Scrooge Duck without the U says, "Week open. The one bright spot was Jumanji with Will Forte. What are the worst of the year?" Ooh, well, Techie did not like the episode.
I strongly disagree. Like, we had Jacob Elordi and Dakota Johnson this year. Those were the two worst of the year. This was leaps and bounds better than those two.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Different strokes, different folks.
Yeah, it takes all kinds. Mm-hmm. And lastly, we have Eric Coomer, who says, "Great show from start to finish."
All right.
So, yeah, I think it was a very solid show.
Yeah, good show. This is, you know, this is one of those shows that keeps me coming back to SNL. Like, you know, even though sometimes we do complain, like, oh, the shows seems kind of, the writing isn't as strong and blah, blah, blah. It's shows like this where, like, where you see what SNL can be, where you're like, damn it, I love this show. This warmed my heart. My heart grew 10
sizes. It renewed our faith.
Yes. My heart grew 10 sizes that night.
Yeah.
So, yeah, strong episode. Strong episode for sure.
And, good stuff.
Yeah. And that's our episode for the guys. That's our episode for the day, guys.
And girls.
And girls and days and days.
Women can listen to this podcast too, Darren.
Yes, you can all. We all are welcome.
I tell him every week, people.
Yeah, I apologize. I'm like Poltergeist. All are welcome. All are welcome.
Every time before we start recording, he's like, "We're not going to have any women listen to this episode, are we?" Right. And I'm like, Darren, no, women can listen to this podcast too.
Bro, I'm trying to get that Joe Rogan.
Regular listeners are women.
Bro, trying to get that Joe Rogan demographic. Come on, bro. Trying to sell this creatine. next week episode, April 13th, we got Ryan Gosling and Chris Stapleton.
That'll be an interesting show. I mean, I'm looking forward to that. He was a pretty good host. I love the papyrus.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Ryan Gosling, he's always game for everything. He has a great sense of humor. He's promoting the new movie, The Fall Guy. So looking forward to seeing what he's going to bring to next week. And Chris Stapleton.
Yeah, I bet we're going to see some sort of Ken Barbie type sketch. So that'll be fun.
Very possible. So, yeah, looking forward to that. And that's the episode, guys. Thanks again for listening to our podcast. As always, you can follow us on Twitter, because we refuse to call it X, at SNL Nerds Show. Give us a like, give us a follow. Write and review us on the podcasting listening thing of your choice, you do. Yeah. And
share us around.
Share us around.
Say, like, hey, folks, listen to this podcast. It's cool. It's funny. It's entertaining.
It's hip. It's cool. It's Noah's Arcade. And as always, you can follow me on all the platforms at Darren Credible, D-A-R-I-N, Credible.
And you can also follow me on the platforms at Trumbull Comic, that's T-R-U-M-B-U-L-L, and the word comic.
Okay. And,
follow the show at SNL Nerd Show. Did we say that? We probably
did. I believe so. That's...
I wanted to say it again. Anyway, just emphasize.
Yeah. Hit it again. Hit it hard.
Yeah.
And, that's all we got, guys.
That's all we got.
say goodnight, Grace.
Well, we'll be back next week with Ryan Gosling. I don't think he's going to be here in the studio with us, but maybe.
You never know. Wish upon a star. You don't know.
Yeah. But until then, nerds out.
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.